Jankovic with a reverse ball, looking for Kerr, and Kerr's in here. It's Sam Kerr. This could finish it, and Kerr off the post, and of course she's finishing it off. Sam Kerr makes it 3 for Chelsea and 4 league titles in a row.
Welcome back to the Fran Kirby's Fight Club. I am Andre Carlisle, and I am here, not with Mariam today, not this time. Mariam's a little bit under the weather, so shout out to her. Hopefully she feels better. But we have a new inductee into the Fight Club. We have the great, the stats man himself, Harry Edwards. Harry, how are you?
I'm good. I'm not liking the big build-up now. I don't want to let anyone down, you know?
You won't.
Yeah, and no. I've got some big shoes to fill with Mariam.
No, absolutely. Mariam will be back. We will talk about things when she is returned, but no, you will be absolutely fine. You follow this team pretty much better than most, and we love the stats that you always put out as well. Let's talk about that a little bit. What is your process? Because somebody will score a goal, and then I'll see like it's super specific stat that comes out, like in like the past 30 games or the past 50 or something. Like, what is your process for doing that?
Lots and lots of spreadsheets. Sometimes before a game, I might, if I have a stat in mind, so like it was against Paris, the 900th Emma Hayes goal or goal under Emma Hayes. I had that in mind because I saw it was coming. Sometimes it's just luck that I look at a stat and see it's coming up. But yeah, I think I have like 3 or 4 spreadsheets open while I'm watching the game. Yeah, it's made it like a second job, which can be fun. But sometimes it's a bit much.
No, that's absolutely incredible. I mean, watching the game is enough for me. Having multiple spreadsheets open at the same time, I power to you. Salute to you for doing that. Also, real quick, not to make fun of it, but it would be hilarious if Emma Hayes had scored 900 goals. I'd love that as well. No worries. So today what we're going to do on the podcast is we're going to review quick reviews on the Paris FC game and Leicester City as well, because those are 2 games that we have not reviewed yet on the podcast. But because it is the December international break and players are away and we won't have club football back until that big game versus Arsenal when we return, we kind of want to just kind of look at the start of the season, you know, look at some players, some performances, some surprise performances, answer some questions about the squad, kind of look at the squad and how they might project for the first part of the new year. And of course, maybe later on, we won't get too deep into it because there's a lot to play out, but there's a lot. Now we have decent sample sizes. It might be interesting to take a look. So that's what we're going to do first. So let's get back into the match reviews. Chelsea 4, Paris FC 1. So the first question I have for you is like, that didn't seem too hard. Arsenal, Wolfsburg, what happened?
Yeah, I think it was the one that I think we know from last season how we matched up against Real Madrid. And I think everyone looked at Hecken as, you know, perhaps the pushovers, obviously how wrong we all were. So I think Paris FC was the one that not only were we worried about, but I think it seemed like everyone was willing for us to lose more than they normally do because, you know, they want to see Chelsea fall the same way Arsenal and Wolfsburg did. And I think maybe one of the problems for Paris was that perhaps they thought that as well, because they wasn't the best first half from us, but then they kind of opened up and allowed us to play our game in the second half. And in other seasons, it might have worked, but this season, obviously, Emma's just got something clicking. And apart from that one game against Man City, I think we've been pretty ruthless at times, and it did the job.
Yeah, I'll be fair. It was 1-1, you know, like it did go into halftime 1-1, and it was kind of like, okay, interesting. But also, we also know that we hadn't played well. There were some chances that were missed early on as well, so it didn't quite seem like we were put under the same amount of pressure, which is kind of our thought about their approach and what really seemed to bother Wolfsburg and Arsenal. It was like, that sort of approach doesn't really seem to bother Chelsea if we have the right people on the pitch, and we definitely did. And then, of course, second half, Sam Kerr does Sam Kerr things.
Yeah, and I think Emma really reacted to the first half with bringing Frank Kirby on for Fleming. I'm a big fan of Fleming, but no one had a good 45 minutes, but she seemed to just have it a slightly bit more rough than the rest. And yeah, bringing Kirby on just opened up the game. And I think I and a few others criticised Emma a lot for her changes or for her lack of substitutions. So, you know, just as rightly give her the credit for changing the game with her subs.
Yeah, I think obviously on the Fran Kirby's Fight Club, we love whenever Fran Kirby gets into the game and changes the game. So that's something that we always look forward to. But it's actually kind of interesting the way Emma is using Fran Kirby a bit. Like, she's made some starts, but also it's like when the game needs a little something, we kind of just go like, okay, Fran, go do your thing. Like, go out there and do what you do. And that's like, it's kind of an amazing option to have, especially off the bench.
Yeah, and I think that was one of, towards the end of last season, there was some, when Kirby hadn't signed a new contract yet, there were some people saying, oh, don't resign her, we need to move on from her. And I was thinking,
oh no,
what's there to lose, really? Like, you think people got annoyed at me a lot for bringing all this up, the homegrown. Like, we needed a home, her for the homegrown players. So yeah, like, use her as a super sub. If she wasn't going to start for the season, if she wasn't going to be at a full fitness at all, like, you can't do worse than having her as a super sub. And like you said, we've kind of had the best of both. We've had her as a starter and it's worked, and we've had her to come off the bench, and I think hopefully she stays fit and she'll be crucial, especially towards the latter end of the season, perhaps more as a sub than as a starter.
Yeah, for those people who had those concerns or wanted Fran Kirby out of here, we absolutely do not subscribe to your type of thinking. Fran Kirby is forever and always welcome at Chelsea, and on Chelsea games, she's incredible. But also, like you said, I do think that's a great point, is to mention, you know, having her, keeping her fit for the full season is something that I also think Emma is trying to do. So not starting her every single time, managing her load, and then, but she still remains an option that you can use. And I think the Paris FC game, as you mentioned, is kind of a perfect example of that. Being like, okay, we have something that's not quite working, but how are they going to react? And we have a player in here who does these sets of things. And for those sets of things, when she's healthy, when she's fit, there aren't many players better than Fran.
Yeah, and to quickly move away from Chelsea, I think it's a problem that England had at the World Cup and recently, yes, that in games where they've struggled, they've not had Fran Kirby to be able to unlock or from the start to change to influence the game. And I think that's been one of the struggles. And it just shows that even at maybe the reduced level of fitness that she's been at, how good, how amazing she still is.
I'm not going to say a whole lot about this, but I just want to know that I mentioned that I saw online that there was some arguments developing between Ella Toon versus Fran Kirby. And I think those are settled now. Okay, we're going to move on. Let's talk about Chelsea-Leicester. Chelsea 5, Leicester 2. This game was weird. It felt like, you know, well, yes, we scored early. We scored quick against them. 2 minutes in, Lauren James just goes unreal. And then there's that 5 minutes in. It's still classified as an own goal. And I'm surprised about that because I thought the shot was going to be on target. It was really close to the goal. I'd be surprised if it wasn't. But guess it wasn't, since it's still listed as an own goal. But Leicester also kept fighting back. I was just like, okay, normally in these games, Chelsea scores early, they score a couple. You may get like a fluke on goal or something like that in the second half. But, and their goals were a little fluky, but, you know, they just, like, I did not expect them to score twice, especially as free scoring as we were. So 5-2 is kind of a wild scoreline for me. This felt like a game that maybe in Chelsea's past, this would have been like 6-0, 6-1, 5-1, something like that. But the fact that it was 5-2, and not that 5-2 suggests it was close, it was just a weird game.
Yeah, and I think my worry before the game was how we'd start, given on how Leicester started against Arsenal last weekend and against City in the Cup. So that I missed the start of the game because I was driving home, and I turned on the FA Player and I was thinking, all right, I'm expecting to see like Chelsea 0, Leicester 1. So to see it 2-0, I was like, what's going on? But like you said, that for the first 5 minutes of when I was watching it back, Leicester was shocked. And then they had the patented AKB break. You know, their goalkeeper went down and it gave them the time to kind of regroup and have a chat and change of tactics. And, you know, I'm not hating. We've benefited from it in the past. You know, you can't hate it. And it worked for them. You know, they refound their composure in there. They were, it was almost as if they remembered, not that we've got too many weaknesses at the minute, they remembered where to target us. And then you could see that was where they were, which I think is particularly down our left. I think Charles and Carter isn't the best partnership defensively at the minute. I think the time need time to work. Paris exploited it, targeted it as well. So I think once they really got that in, they stepped up the game. And then, you know, even when we went 3-1 up, that didn't knock them. It wasn't until the 4-2 that I think they just, I don't know, not that they gave up, but I think they lost hope. But to stick in it for that long, and like you said, you know, I think last season it was 6-0 and 8-0 to us against them. And, you know, the first time they've ever scored against us, and shows how far they've come, how good they're doing. But I think, yeah, it just wraps up what it was. Pretty bizarre afternoon and a bizarre first half.
Yeah, and to be honest, for their goal, like you mentioned, that Carter-Charles side, when Carter missed that tackle up high, I was like, oh, this is going to be a problem. You could see the goal developing after that. And even though she kind of recovered, there was still enough time and space, and her momentum was taking her to where that could be used against her in recovery. So they did a good job to exploit that. And then that, it's almost like both their goals were almost telegraphed for me, because I saw that one. And then when that foul happened so close to the box, I was like, oh, this is going to be a problem. Cause this is like, it's not one of those. It's like, it was close, but it's not one of those that was too close. It was kind of in a good area, and AKB did a good job to get her palms on it, but still it was just reacting to that. That's always a chaotic scenario. And that's kind of the type of thing, if you're a Leicester playing Chelsea, that's the kind of thing you want to create anyway.
Yeah, I think, in like you said, in those situations, the free kick was such a good position. You either, you know, if you've got a really good set free kick taker, and it was a good free kick, you know, you go for the goal, but then you sit up to create the uncertainty, the chaos afterwards. And I think it was JRK that let the Nevin run just off her a little bit, you know, capitalising on having a non-defender in that situation. And then still a bit of a scramble, but you have to, one, maybe look at Chelsea for how we set up defensively there, but also credit to Leicester for creating the chaos and the situation for them to bundle it in. And I do think, at first viewing, I thought it was lucky that AKB was on the pitch to save the free kick. But then looking back, it was definitely a yellow card. But I think Marin was covering. But the fact that she didn't get anything for it, I don't know how. I don't know what the referee was thinking.
We could have a long podcast episode about refereeing decisions in both the WSL and the Champions League. In fact, we've had a few already this season, so we're going to avoid that. But yes, I agree with you. And I saw that, I was like, ooh, this is dangerous. But then I saw, okay, it could just be yellow. And then it was nothing. It's like, okay, so fine, whatever. Okay, in this game, I thought this game was interesting as well from a Chelsea perspective. 5 of their 7 shots on target were goals, which is just kind of like, when a team can do that to you, that's kind of, it's just like, there aren't many teams that can do that. But one in particular, Aggie Beaver-Jones, who has been absolutely incredible starting this season. I think she's kind of, I think it's a battle now between who gets those minutes between her and Mia Fischel, and the way that she's scoring right now is just like, it's really hard to select Mia over her. And that's kind of like, maybe this won't last the entirety of the season, but it's certainly great to see now. So Aggie Beaver-Jones, what is that, 5-5 now?
Yeah, and it was only Kirby, England and Kerr have scored 5-5 for Chelsea in the WSL.
That's incredible.
And Kirby's was over 2 seasons, I think 4 at the end of one season and 1 at the start of the next. And like you said, it is, you know, I like what I've seen about Fischel, and obviously you'll know more about her than I do. I'd like to actually see her more as a strike partnership with Kerr. I think from what I've seen as Chelsea, she seems to be happier to lay things off to another striker, which is why her link up with Lauren James has worked so well. Whereas Aggie's more direct in her dribbling. She's happy to just put her head down, run towards goal, try a shot from like a weird position, like she scored against Everton. And yeah, because of the form she's in, I don't think it's going to last. And I don't think that's anything to do with her. I think it would be, I don't want to say stupid, but it would be bad to expect her to be scoring every game, because she's a player who turned 20 like 3 months ago. Like, and she's not, you know, she's not Erling Haaland. She's not Kylian Mbappe. She's not, you know, going to go on these stupid freakish scoring runs. This is a purple patch. Enjoy it while it lasts. it's all about sticking with her and how we develop her when she's not getting those runs of goals. I think she's brilliant, and like I said, take it while it lasts. I think it's Emma's doing well with how she's managing her minutes.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think you kind of have to do this if you have a player who is, you know, in her situation. I mean, both Mia and Aggie Beaver-Jones are young players. They're not expected to break into the starting squad anytime this season, but there's a competition for minutes, and you basically want to ride whoever's hot and kind of see what they can do. So she's getting an opportunity to flourish. She's got a lot of confidence that when she, like you mentioned, that shot where she cut inside and hit it with her left foot and it was top corner, far netting. I was like, okay, so this is a very confident player now that we're talking about. So like, you just want to keep seeing that kind of thing develop. But for Fischl, I think you're right. Like, we will see more. And I think finding the scenarios where you can place her to where she can play her game a bit more, perhaps a strike partnership, perhaps getting Lauren James closer to her because she really likes that interplay. She's smart at it. She's super good at it, which we've seen already this season, which is just a different dynamic than what I think Aggie Beaver-Jones does and gives you. So, you know, it's just a matter of figuring it out, but it's also tough to figure that out from official standpoint when Aggie Beaver-Jones just won't stop scoring, which is a thing that I also love.
Yeah. And obviously Aggie's shown that she can do what she can do in so few minutes, whereas Mia isn't getting that chance. Or maybe her game isn't quite suited to making that instant impact. But like you said, it'll come over the season. You know, she's only been at the club a few months, you know, and she's young. She's not. Her time will come, and I back her to do really well.
Yeah, I think the flashes that we've already seen suggest that she's going to be fine. And where I'm at with it is just like, obviously, I'm in the U.S. I like watching a lot of the U.S. players. I like rooting for especially the young players that I think are that I believe have been more ready to step up and take a bigger role for years now. Mia is definitely one of them. So, of course, those are my biases laid out there. But also, we've already seen flashes of what she can do in a Chelsea shirt. And I think it's super exciting. So, okay. Chelsea's November record. 5 wins, 1 draw. Loud boos for that one draw, because that absolutely, as Emma said after the game, should have been a 3-1 win. Again, refereeing decisions. Not going to go into it. 5 wins, 1 draw. I believe this counting is correct. Math is not my strong suit, but 25 goals scored, 6 conceded. 1 is that terrible pin in the Madrid game. Again, avoiding refereeing. But given the fixtures we had, how close they were, we had 1 week where it was Sunday, Thursday, Saturday, an early kickoff on Saturday. Like, pretty damn good.
Yeah, I think we've seen this before. Like, towards the end of last season, we had multiple different like periods where there were just games all smushed together, and we might have had a loss in 1 of 7. And I think we've shown that this is why we win trophies, because when the games come thick and fast, we might not play well, but we can grind out the wins. You know, I think Aston Villa, it's Aston Villa this season rather than Aston Villa last season, but they showed that they gave Arsenal and Man United a tough run this season before eventually falling away. Liverpool obviously asked questions of the big teams. Leicester have been doing well. Real Madrid, and you know, it's none of them are pushovers. I don't think we've played on paper one pushover yet this season. And I think I was looking through the fixtures, and I think this is our best start to a campaign for a while in terms of wins. And it's just sad that this is going to be the last, you know, the last start to a season under Emma, to bring the mood down a slight bit, you know. But maybe that's a good thing. Maybe this is them putting it all on the line. You know, we're gonna play 40 games this season. We're gonna win 39 or 38. You know, minus the asterisk draw against Real Madrid and then Man City, that, you know, we just scrap that each season. That's okay. I think it's testament to how well Emma's got this team going at the minute, even with the new players coming in.
Yeah, there's something that feels very, I don't know if like automatic or just like what the right word is, but there's something that just feels like right, like everything's working the way it should. And that's a really good place to be in. You know, being here in the States, I will apologize for stealing Emma. However, we have a lot of things that need to be fixed. And she's like probably the best person to do it. So apologies, but I'm also excited about what she can do here. I think now's a good time actually to transition to like player spotlights, because there's a lot of players that at the beginning of this season have really stood out. You know, you have your normal ones, who you'd expect, Sam Kerr, you know, scoring hat tricks, being great. But I think honestly, if something as silly as a kind of like first few months of the season MVP award was a real thing, it just might go to Neve Charles, because I did not expect this.
No. I was a fan of her last season. I think I was always happy to defend her when certain people were kind of being picky with her mistakes, I think I would say. I don't think even like the staunchest of Neve Charles defenders last season would have expected this start. I saw someone, I can't remember if it was like a pundit or just a fan on Twitter, saying, you know, it's testament to Serena Wiegmann, you know, Neve Charles' changes. Like, how?
I saw that, yeah.
Like, no, this is, Emma's been working on Neve Charles since she joined. You know, when she signed for us from relegated Liverpool, you know, who would have looked at that player and thought, yeah, at the start of the 2023-24 season, she'd be genuinely, arguably, one of the best fullbacks in the WSL. And I think the Leicester game, just going back to that for a sec, Sam Kerr's goal was all about her, showing all that she can do. It was a quick throw-in 1-2 with Cuthbert, ran down the line, then used her strength to kind of get into a crossing position, put a good ball into the box. And I think she's one of those players that isn't naturally good. She doesn't have that as much natural ability as some players will, but the hard work gets her there. It's almost like the Frank Lampard against Steven Gerrard comparison. Frank Lampard got so good because he put so much work into his game. And I think Neve Charles has done that. And not only are we benefiting, but she's benefiting. And I think she should be England's starting left back. I think only injury should really like stop her from making that Chelsea spot her own. I can't see anyone displacing her.
Yeah, I was going to say like that. I think I saw that on social media as well with Serena getting a lot of credit for Neve Charles. And I was like, I'm pretty sure that's not the case. But also, what a parting gift. It seems like that left back position has been a thing that England has needed to nail down. And having Neve Charles in the form that she's in, obviously, we'll see if it's system dependent or whatever. But I just think you look at the decisions that she's making, how she's positioning herself and how she's grown over the years. I mean, we don't want to remember that Barcelona game. Like, you remember like how she's grown over the years and what she's doing and the performance she's putting in. He's been unbelievable this season. What is it? 1 goal, 4 assists already in all competitions. I know I threw that off the top of my head to see if, let's see if the
2 goals, 5 assists. This.
See, I knew it. I was
wrong. Yeah, so even better.
Even better than I thought. But yeah, she's been incredible. I absolutely have loved this turn. And it is one of those things that I very much applaud Emma for sticking with it. Being like, no, she's going to get minutes. She's going to play. I think this is her best position. And we can make it work with her here. And no arguments this season, right? Like, it's been incredible. A player who hasn't been here as long as Neve has been here is Shoka Nuskin. I want to talk about her a little bit because I've been super, like, I was very excited about her signing. Like, if you can't get Oberdorf, get Nuskin. It's kind of the thing for me. It's like, we need that player in midfield. And I was very much thinking she was going to be defensive midfielder. And Emma's like, no, she's going to actually play everywhere in midfield. And she's also going to score a perfect hat trick at some point. So it's kind of like she's doing everything in pretty much any job in midfield she's being asked to do. And just like an even better signing than I even thought initially. And I was super high on it initially.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you said, everyone's excitement was, oh, we finally got like this young, impressive and, you know, a player with a high ceiling, DM. But this is not the Shoka Nuskin we signed, but that's a good thing. Like, this is...
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just hard to describe sometimes. Like, the role that she's played is like she's been with us for 10 years. You know, it's like she's in Sophie Ingle's steps where she's close to racking up 200 appearances. You know, she's just slotted in seamlessly. She can play that deeper role, but... She's just absolutely killing it box to box. And, you know, the fact that even the hat trick aside, that in quite a few games, she seems to be our biggest goal threat. And I think, she's 22. I just want to double check on that. Yeah, she was 23 in January. You know, this is a player who is still so young, you know, just need Emma to, you know, get Obud off in beside her and then we'll be set. But, but yeah, she's been marvellous. Easily signing of the season for me and across the WSL.
I love that you said across the WSL, because it's funny that so many teams were active towards the end of the transfer deadline that all of like the wrap-up shows and pieces were like, oh, you know, Manchester United won the transfer window and some of the other teams did, you know, Arsenal secured Kira Cooney-Cross, who was actually very sad about, because I think she would have been great in this setup with Chelsea and with Emma Hayes. But like, just because Chelsea did their work early doesn't mean we should forget about that. I mean, Ashley Lawrence and obviously Shoka Nuskin, but also we've got Katerina Macario to go, and we'll talk about her a little bit later. But yeah, like this was a hell of a window for Chelsea, and Shoka's just been great. The one thing I love about her, well, I love multiple things about her, but I did not realize that she was so, like, as athletic as she is. She's like, she's kind of has like a big frame. She's tall, so she's kind of hard, but she wins a lot of duels in midfield, super athletic, and it helps her to be like a target in the box as well, which, you know, it kind of makes me wonder why Germany keeps playing, maybe because Vos Tecklenburg is gone now. Maybe this won't be the case, but I was like, this is not a center back. You want to have this player doing a lot of things in midfield and maybe even in the box, because she's good enough to do it and athletic enough to be a mismatch for a lot of players.
Yeah, the fact that she's been playing centre back, and, you know, I know it's not real football, but in EAFC on Ultimate Team, they have, you know, players have their alternate positions, but Nuskin is just centre back. She can't play anywhere else, just centre back. And it's just like,
that's silly.
No, it's just no. And yeah, like you said, with the frame she's got to be strong, but so nimble on the ball.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think of a comparison that, like, I don't think, from my knowledge, and, you know, I won't profess to be an expert of women's football, but I can't think of many players like this in the women's game. And in the men's, I'm thinking, now, if this gets taken out of context, it might be bad, but like Jude Bellingham, who Ruben Loftus-Cheek, you know, who's known for his size and his build, but on the way he dribbles, the way the control he has on the ball when he's fully fit and up to it. Obviously, looking at one of Niskan's compatriots, you know, Michael Ballack, that obviously Loftus-Cheek has been compared to. I think it's changed the way we play, and it's brilliant.
I've got one for you, and there is a size disadvantage or mismatch here, because it's not quite the same in terms of height. But there is a similar impact in games, and that's Sam Mewis for the U.S. And of course, I'm going to know like a few U.S. players, so apologies for the bias again. But Sam Mewis was one of the U.S.'s most productive midfielders ever. And it's a shame that she's had so many knee injuries, but she was 6 feet tall. So of course, three inches taller than Nuskin. But similar situation, really big, really physical, really strong, but really good with the ball at her feet, like able to move the ball, able to pick a pass, able to arrive late in the box, able to be a target in the box. All of these things are also what we're seeing from Shoka Nuskin. So I'm just like, I hadn't really thought about that just because of the height difference, which does make a difference. I mean, you could just really boot the ball into midfield and Sam Mewis would win it because she's a giant. But everything else is kind of the same. And I think it's had a similar impact. We saw with the U.S. team, you know, in winning the World Cup in 2019, Sam Mewis was a big part of that. And then also when she came to the WSL and played for Manchester City, there's just like skyscraper running around in midfields. And it was just very difficult to do anything with her, because what do you do with a player that good, that control, also that agility and that strength? So maybe that's it. Maybe that's what I'm, maybe that's one to go with. Got to think about that a bit. I don't know. Anyway, I've gotten myself into a pondering situation. I'm going to move the show on now, and I'll think about that later outside of the show. Lauren James, I want to talk about her as well, because it seems to me as well that she has taken another leap in her development. We know that she can dribble around anybody, through anybody. She's really difficult to stop. But the one thing with her has just been improving the decision-making in the final third. And I think one thing that really stands out to me this season is she hasn't been settling for taking a lot of those speculative long shots. Instead, she's done like super precise passes. And I'm thinking about specifically that assist, that outrageous assist for Sam Kerr against Paris FC. Like the spin she puts on that ball, where it bounces, how it bounces right up to in the perfect height for Sam Kerr to get one touch and get it by the keeper. She's done a couple of these things where her passing, once she has a defense kind of unstable or defender out of position, she's able to then pick a spot for a pass rather than shoot. And I think that's been a huge improvement to her game and also her productivity.
Yeah, and I think last season, and again, obviously you mentioned the United States, I mentioned England. One of the main criticisms for her, which I don't agree with, was that she's selfish. But no, it's exactly what you said, is what I've always said, is her decision-making is just not wasn't the best. I think partly down to age, and obviously she's got to grow into her game. But yeah, sometimes she'd hold on to the ball in the dribble for too long. Sometimes she'd shoot when a pass was a better option. Like I said, sometimes it was a shot that she had really no right to take, no reason to take. For me, that's not her being selfish. That was just her, she needed to work on her decision-making. And this season, it's just been, yeah, something's clicked for her. And she's just such a threat. And I think she's one of those players where you might know what she's going to do. Like, as a defender, you might know what she's going to do, but you can't stop her.
Yeah.
Like, you know she's going, like you said, she's going to put that cross into the box for Sam Kerr. You can't stop it. You know she's going to try and dribble past you. You can't stop her, you know. And she's, I still think there's a bit of work on the decision-making to come. I think sometimes she, I don't know, perhaps tries to be the hero too much a little bit. I think Man City was a game that sticks in my mind where she was still taking those speculative shots when perhaps the pass might have been better, because obviously she's trying to get us back into the game, and I've got no problem with her trying to get us back into the game. But I think there's still maybe just a little bit of, I'm not going down the selfish route, but just a reminder that, you know, share the responsibility. But I think that all those final kinks in her game will go soon. I think she's on the path to greatness. And again, we're lucky that she plays for us, and we're lucky that we've, putting it down to Emma a little bit, had a manager that nurtures her and almost not keeps her level-headed, but reminds her that, hey, you know, you're good, but you can get better. You work hard, you can be the best. You're good now. Just think, if you keep working, just think how good you're going to be. And I think when it wasn't the Paris game, I think it was the Liverpool game, where after the match she said, you know, that the news of Emma leaving hit her particularly hard and she's had a rough time dealing with it. Mm-hmm. And I think that just shows the connection that they have. And again, Chelsea are benefiting and James is benefiting.
Yeah. And I think it's the selfish thing always bothers me, especially when you're talking about young players, because in particular, honestly, young players with similar skill sets is the players who are very good on the ball, very good at dribbling. You see elements of flair, you know, some creativity, the ability to try, the audacious. I love that stuff. Like, that's part of the joy of the game. Like, yeah, you want her to be, you know, you're not going to score the 30-yard banger every single game. So there are better percentage things you can do that are going to help the team better in the long term. I don't want her to lose a lot of this, but you're right. I do think it's important to focus some of that. And I think that's why Emma's been so good for her, is to kind of tell her, like, yeah, you're good. You can dribble by everybody. But now if you start adding these things to your game, you become more and more unstoppable. And I think that's what we're seeing in this part of the season. So it's just like, young player with this skill set, you don't want to discourage it, but you just want to mold it. You want to shape it. You want to get it to the point where it can be as maximally effective as possible. And that's what's been really fun, to just watch the development and see the decisions that she's making that she wouldn't have made last season. And then next season, we'll see decisions that she wouldn't have made this season, right? So just continue to improve, hopefully, you know, depending on the coach. But we're just going to see, like, see how she continues to develop. And it's super fun to have a player like this that is so, like, unpredictable. You know she's going to do something, but what something is she going to do to a defender at the moment? Are you going to get nutmegged? Is she going to sit you down? Is she going to dribble around you? Is she going to take the shot? Is she going to pull out a ridiculous assist? Like, you don't know, but we're all going to find out together. It's kind of what happens with her. And those kind of players are just super fun to watch. I love it. So I also wanted to talk about Sam Kerr, but the main thing I wanted to talk about Sam Kerr, because we all know Sam Kerr's great. She scores goals, scores goals in bunches. I think the only thing really to say about Sam Kerr at the moment is please sign a contract extension.
Yeah, you know, it's clock's ticking, you know, and I think, you know, there's still half a season to go, but, and you can say, oh, it doesn't matter. She's, you know, there's still time to go, but with every day that passes that she doesn't sign, there's just a tiny little thing in the back of my mind. It's like, okay, we're getting ready, you know, get ready for her to leave. Let's get ready for, you know, the Sam Kerr has announced that she'll be leaving Chelsea at the end of the season. Let's, I think it's one of those, even if it comes and we expect it to come, it's going to hurt because, you know, in such a short space of time, she's done so much for us. And to have a player like that, it just lift us up another level. We've had good goal scorers in the past. We have another one in Frank Kirby, but to have that almost ruthless goal scorer, you know, I think a couple of times this season, Sam's not been good in games, but she ends with a goal. I think it was the West Ham game that I went to. She was just not in that game at all. She scores. And and now I think she's, again, it's not just scoring goals now though. It's, she becomes so integral to our link-up play, to the build-up of the goals, that take her goals away from him, we're still losing such an important player if she doesn't sign. And it's just, please, just give her what she, just give her anything she wants, you know, like, give, like, buy her £1 million mansion, buy her two, just, short of, you know, forcing her to stay, just do what you can to make her realise that, you know, Chelsea is your home now. You know, you don't need sunny weather. You don't need, you know, hot climates. You can deal with the rain. And, you know, we had like 2 minutes of snow today. You can deal with that. It's nice. You know, London's nice.
It's nice. Yeah, yeah. I'm hoping they can do whatever they need to do. I know there's also life decisions. She's, congratulations to her, announced her engagement to Christy Mewis, which is awesome, which is also like, you know, I'm also wondering, maybe Christy wants to live in London. That'd be great. Bring her on over. It'll be fine. You know what I mean? So like, I'm with you. I'm like, do whatever you can. Exhaust all opportunities. If it's just that she has to go or wants to go because of life decisions, obviously can't get in the way of that. But she, if that happens, she'll be sorely missed. But also spend every single dollar that you can, every single pound that you can, to make sure that doesn't happen is kind of where we're both at. Okay. Now, it hasn't all been perfect. There are some things where Chelsea can improve. And I do want to talk about a few things, maybe not even improve, but there's also some improvement, some just questions for the rest of the remainder of the year, just to kind of see, or season, just to kind of see. The first one I think is kind of the most obvious one, at least to me, is the defense. Without Millie Bright, things get very interesting. And even sometimes with Millie Bright, depending on the communication that does or doesn't happen, I'm thinking of the whiff kick in that one game that was unfortunate. But, you know, just the defense. I thought when we brought Khadija Buchanan into the game, into Chelsea, that was going to be it. Bright and Buchanan were going to be our central defensive pairing, and that was going to be perfect because they complemented, their skill sets seemed to complement very well. But Buchanan hasn't been able to nail down a spot. And when she's in, she's kind of looked uncertain, unsteady. And it's been not just from a standpoint of like, I wish I was right, but also just if she could play up to her ability within the Chelsea system, I think the Chelsea defense grows exponentially. Because I don't think there's like, she's a pretty rare in terms of skill set defender. Instead, we've had Jess Carter next to Millie Bright often. And even when there was a chance to get Buchanan in there, we've had Mara Mielda in there next to Jess Carter. So to me, it's almost like Buchanan is tumbling down that order. And that is a little concerning to me from a personal standpoint with her, but also the team, because that's a player that we could use, but is so error prone and doesn't fit just yet into what Emma Hayes wants.
Yeah, this is not a young defender coming through. This is an experienced defender who's won multiple Champions Leagues.
Yeah.
She's not a bad player. She's a very, very good player. And like you say, for whatever reason, who knows, it just hasn't clicked. And yeah, I think she's maybe just above Anik Nawa for the, you know, in the centre back pecking order. But even Anik got on the pitch over her at the weekend.
I was surprised.
It's, yeah, I think this season, Emma's, you know, normally season, new signings can take a year to get fully embedded into Emma's team, and we've seen that with so many different players, but the fact that she's, yeah, like you said, even Maren Mjelde's in front of her, the fact that she's not, okay, you might want to start Brighton Carter anyway, the fact that she's not the next best option, she's not the next pick, I think for me has shown that Emma's perhaps on one of the rare times that she's kind of come to terms that, you know, Buchanan, you're not the player I signed, you know, you're not the player I thought was coming, and I don't think anyone's to blame. I think sometimes signings just don't work, and sadly, because this is a player that we've so needed, we needed that solidity, that skill set in defence, this sadly it just hasn't happened, and I don't know what the future holds for her. I don't know whether it's, you know, seller at the end of the season, seller in January. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know what's to come. I think we can all just say that it's not worked out.
Yeah, it's a tough one. You're right. Like, it, normally players coming in, you know, especially in defense, they need time to kind of get familiar with the other defenders, with the system. It is intense. You have to have good 1v1 defending skills, but you also have to be coordinated with the rest of your defense. I mean, it's like most systems, but, you know, the Chelsea system is especially with players like Millie Bright next to you. Of course, as we mentioned, fullback situation before, we had Ashley Lawrence, Neve Charles trying to figure things out there as well. Eve Parise, she's had kind of like up and down at the beginning of her Chelsea career, but now seems to be trusted by Emma. But it's like, once you get to that point where you've been with Emma for a season or so, if you still can't be trusted, then it's almost like, ooh, this isn't going to work. It usually doesn't turn around when it's gone this far. And that's where I'm sad, because I don't, like I said, I really think that I like on paper, and this is kind of the thing about building a team, it's tough. You know, on paper, the back line looks perfect, right? You know, you've got Ashley Lawrence, you got Khadija Buchanan, you got Millie Bright, you got Neve Charles, who's in like excellent form. That should be it. That should be any, like, that's, to me, on paper, that's like Champions League starting quality, like final starting quality players. Combined, 3 out of 4 do well. It's just that one that is not working. And I have not been able to pinpoint why, but that's why this stuff is so tough to build a squad and to actually like get all of the players working together. And it's, like you said, it's really no one's fault, but it just makes me sad because I thought that was going to be it. So I also want to talk about Hannah Hampton a little bit. I'm actually surprised that we haven't seen her start in goal. There was a lot of kind of back and forth from, started with Musovic and then Berger got back in. Musovic maybe got a game and now Berger seems to be back. And the question all summer was, what are Chelsea doing with all these goalkeepers? Well, we've had go on loan, which is great. We've needed that. But we still have 3 here who are pretty capable starters. And at this point, I thought Hampton might. But Hampton's an interesting goalkeeper to me. She's like super good with her feet. You can trust her with that, but it's the shot stopping that needs to get up to the level to where you can be like that number one. Again, another super young player, but I guess where do you fall on the Hampton thing? Did you expect to see her at this point in the season starting a game or no?
Yes and no, I would say. I think on paper, I'm not sure there's been a game where I would look at it and say, yeah, you know, that's good for Hampton. You know, where we haven't really got an easy team in the Champions League, there's not like a Vlasnia or a Savet that you can start her against to think she's going to have a really easy game. She can just basically pull up a chair and relax.
I'm not going to lie, I thought that was going to be the Villa game, just for the narrative.
Yeah. Yeah, so that might have been the best opportunity, but then obviously you've got the history with Villa, so maybe that might have stopped her. But then, like you said, with the switching in between Berger and Musovic, that Hazers seem to be doing a bit more than she did last season. The fact that Hannah's not been thrown into rotation, and this isn't, like you said, this isn't any old, you know, third choice goalkeeper making up numbers. This is, you know, like even Emily Orman last season, she's really young. You know, she was never going to play. Hannah Hampton's young, but she's got she's got experience. She's she's played for her country. She's, you know, been a first choice goalkeeper in the WSL. It's a weird one. I think everyone back expected her to go on loan. I'm guessing perhaps Emma's thought it's better to keep an eye on her here and develop her as part of the squad. You know, train with the defenders to eventually be number one. But like you said, work on her shot stopping. I think like that is weird saying this about the goalkeeper. That is her weakness. You know, she's not bad, but there's work to be done. And for a team like Chelsea, you need a goalkeeper that can, you know, AKB has her moments, Mucevic has her moments, but you know AKB can pull out a stop, a game-saving stop. You know, can't remember what season it was now, but a few seasons ago, the late save against Man City, that she shouldn't have stopped that.
I think about all the time.
Yeah, like, she had no right to make that save, but you know she can do that. Whereas, I guess the trust isn't in Hampton just yet. They've got to build it up first. And obviously there are some things hampering her. You know, she's obviously got her depth perception that means she's maybe not going to be the greatest shot stopper. But I think they know that they can make her the best, get her to the best for her ability. And I think that will still be good enough for Chelsea. It's just getting her there first. And so having her work with, not to toot our own horn, some of the best, or one like the best goalkeeping coaches that there are, is the right decision. Hopefully she'll play. You know, looking at the fixtures, I'm eyeing up that Bristol game, that Bristol City game, in between the two Heckham matches. You know, why not? That seems like the perfect match for her.
Yeah, and to be honest, like, I completely agree. And, you know, shot stopping is something that, you know, reaction time, positioning, those are things that she's just got to get better at as a young goalkeeper. That's can be said for pretty much every young goalkeeper. So it's not like she's super behind in those. But also, whatever the gap people may thought she had in terms of her shot stopping, Aston Villa replaced her with a very good goalkeeper in Van Dumselaar. And they're still letting in a lot of goals. So it clearly wasn't just Hannah Hampton down there, right? So like, that's something else to kind of look at. So whatever gap people think is, it's probably smaller than you would anticipate given how many goals Villa has let in, especially last season. But there are some things that, you know, Chelsea's a different caliber. You have to get up to that level. And, you know, what we've seen is promising. The thing I've also liked, and obviously they're just social media videos, but she looks very comfortable at Chelsea. She looks like she's having a lot of fun. She looks like she's fitting in. And if that's going to be the case, especially from a player who's used to starting every game, if they can be like, show that personality, feel that comfortable and kind of even playful in some moments, that's what you want. If they're sulking on the bench, then yeah, you got to get them alone or you got to get them out of there. So for me, it's like people were concerned about how that would go. She wasn't getting game time, but it seems to be okay. And again, complete pure speculation from very short social media clips, but it looks genuine to me, especially in her teammates' responses to her. So I do think that Bristol game, that would be an interesting one to see if she could step on the pitch there for the first time for Chelsea. Okay, two other players I want to talk about. Really just injuries right now to kind of discuss. Melly, every time she gets injured, everybody starts wondering, is this more? Is this a pregnancy? And I'm like, I don't want to speculate. We're not going to talk about that, but we'll see what happens. Right now, it seems like it's just an injury. We'll wait and see. But when she was playing, what was kind of your assessment of how she was fitting into that midfield? Because I think she's another one of those that missed some time, kind of like Fran Kirby. When she misses time, she comes back and you're like, okay, so you've been ready to go. You haven't like missed any time. Like you've stepped up. And Melly kind of had a similar start to the season where it was like, oh, hell yeah. Like this is the player we've wanted to see for quite a while. And it didn't seem like she needed much time to get into the groove, which is where it's a little sad that the injury is a little ill-timed.
Yeah, this was not a player that had however many months off to have a baby. You know, this is a player who looked like she'd been playing every week. And I'd even say at the best of her game, she even looks better now than she did when she first signed for us, which I think is testament to her and the work that she put in her recovery, really recovery in getting back to fitness after having the baby. And she's... I think we do miss her sometimes in midfield. I think we miss that. I was talking about it the other day. I think Erin and Nuskan are quite similar players in terms of playing styles. And I think it works, but you need a third midfielder. You need someone like Leupolz to sit there with the ability, you know, to... I think my biggest fault for Ingle in comparison to Melly is that Ingle seems... Melly's more press resistant. There are times where Ingle's got the ball on the edge of our box and I'm nervous. Whereas when Melly's on the ball, it's easy. You know, she makes everything look so easy. And I think Emma said that the hope is that she's back after the international break. So I think that hopefully, you know, puts paid to any rumours at the minute that Sami Khedira is ruining our season again. but yeah, she's like just a fantastic player. And yeah, the level that she's reached. And again, I think there's more to come from her. I know she's hitting probably not past her prime, but she's hit her prime. She's not going to get amazingly better. But I think once she maintains that level, that could be the catalyst for us to go on, hopefully, you know, a ridiculous run of wins that, listen, could end well. You know, could end with something a little special.
Yeah, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I do hope that she gets back. Like you said, you know, we're gonna ignore the freak out that's happening on social media in terms of the speculation. But hopefully she gets back on the pitch because she was having a very good season. And I think she is a profile of player that we could need, especially since we're using Newskin apparently to do everything else. It would be nice to have a player to sit deeper a little bit. And I agree with you in terms of the comparison versus Ingle. I love Sophie Ingle. I think it's been a true testament to her how well she continues to excel with a lot of midfielders changing places, but also her role changing as well, being able to sit deeper and kind of orchestrate, which has kind of always been her thing, besides when she plays center back, I guess, with Wales from time to time. But like, she's been consistent, which is not really expected. I used to be a little nervous about her kind of getting, you know, overwhelmed in midfield, especially defensively. But she's done well with her positioning. I think having players like, you know, Cuthbert and Newskin helps because they're very mobile. They're very agile. They're very difficult players to beat 1v1. But yeah, I do think having Melly would help give us more variety in midfield and maybe even stability from a possession standpoint as well. Because like you said, she does make things look super easy. And her passing range is very, very good. Okay. So as a US fan, save the best for last. I'm nervous because it's been a very long injury for Katarina Macario, but when fit, I've watched her since she was at college in the US at Stanford. She's incredible. At Lyon, she was incredible. I mean, just think of that, going from college, university to Lyon, right? So like that gives you an idea of like the talent level we're dealing with. Of course, tore ACL, very, very long recovery. Reportedly has not stepped back on the pitch. I think she had a setback that was kind of announced ahead of the World Cup because as US fans, we were kind of looking forward to maybe she was going to make it back and be fit for that. She made an announcement, said she wasn't going to be. And so now, I believe Emma Hayes said recently, we won't see her until 2024. I've heard people say that she's ready to play and was just doing the thing where she's like with Lauren James, until you're 100%, 100%, we're not going to put you out there. But I just can't help. But like, I need to see it, right? Like, I know how good she is. And it's like, we're doing all of this. The team is playing super well. And you have this player who has got such a remarkable and unique skill set and is so good at so many different things. You're almost wondering, like, how much better could this team be? But one step at a time, can we please see her on the pitch soon? I'm getting nervous.
Yes, when you put about Macario in the notes, my thought was, you know, the only assumption is either her recovery just hasn't gone well. Like you said, there's been setbacks. And I remember with that setback, that was, I can't remember if it was just before or after her signing was announced by Chelsea, but there were some fans that were hoping, I think she mentioned about, you know, getting ready to start afresh at a new club so that she can hit the ground running there. And I think there were some people that were hoping, oh, you know, she's going to be back for the start of the season. And we're now in November and it's still obviously a few months off. And my other point was, she's getting there, but Emma is being super cautious. Exactly like you said about Lauren James, you know, this is a player that's been out for so long. And see, everyone knows how good she was. And I say was because I think in the past we've seen players not come back from the ACL injury as good as they was, and you hope that's not the case. So I think it's good to preach a bit of patience. You know, we might not get Kat at her best until next season. You know, and that's okay. It's just about making sure, even if she gives us 20% of that, as long as she's fit, as long as she's not doing anything too strenuous for her injuries. We've seen it with Reece James in the men's side, that dude gets rushed back from injury every time. 2 weeks later, he's off again injured. That's because we're so reliant on him. And I think maybe it's a good thing that at the minute, how well we're playing without Kat, because, and I mean this in the best possible way, not that we don't need her, we're not reliant on her. She doesn't need to come on she doesn't need to be rushed in to start. She doesn't need to play a couple of games in a row that would hamper her return. You know, when she comes back, play her 5 minutes. You know, let her sit on the bench a couple of times, play her for another 10 minutes. You know, we're blessed at the minute with good players in good form. But like I said, it would just be nice to have that extra sprinkling of magic in there to use and to play when she's ready for it. And it's exciting times. But yeah, I do think Emma's just, you know, holding back on us a little bit. You know, maybe when the Chelsea social media person's got their phone out at the training ground, maybe she just says, you know, Kat, go, you know, just go in the gym for a sec. You know, just hide behind the person taking the footage. I think, yeah, she's not fully there, but I think Emma's playing cards close to her chest as she normally does.
Yeah, I've definitely wanted to be, and again, definitely agree with the approach to preach patience. It's almost like the inverse of the Buchanan conversation, though, is that where I look at it on paper and I get so excited about, like, the possibility, like adding Kat to what this team can already do. Like, there are players we haven't even talked about who played really good this season, who've kind of found form. I'm thinking of Conrad as being another player who's kind of found form and found her space and what she's meant to do when she gets the ball, when she's in space, when certain situations arise and she's doing it. So, like, I get excited about the opportunity of all of these players playing around Kat, because she's just like, she finds space. She's super technical. The vision's outrageous. The passing's outrageous. Saw in that when Lyon shocked Barcelona it's funny to say Lyon of all teams shocked Barcelona, but that's pretty much what happened given the way Barcelona had played and were talked about. But she was key to that as well. Helping from a pressing angle off the ball, but also being dangerous in attack, you know, finding those spaces to really not let Barcelona build out the way they really wanted to. So, like, she can do so much and elevate the team so much, but I'm with you. Yes, let's be patient. I'm hoping that Emma Hayes is doing an Emma Hayes thing and saying we haven't needed this player. So we're just going to kind of, you know, let her take her time. When we actually need her, we'll probably be something like a Champions League semifinal or final. That's a lot to put on her. She hasn't stepped on a pitch in a while. So we'll see. It all depends on her health and how she feels. If she's 100% physically, then it's just about getting her integrated into the team. If she's not quite there 100% physically, then yeah, don't rush her back. Like you mentioned, the Reece James thing. And I mean, plenty of others have struggled to recover from the injuries in men's and women's football. So yeah, I'm just scared. But also, man, she's so damn good. Like, I want to see it in a Chelsea shirt. I want to see it. And I want to see it this season. But I think I'm going to have to be patient. I might cry. But we're going to leave on a good note. Harry, we thank you again. I did not anticipate us talking this long, but there's a lot to talk about. But I wanted to give you space at the end to say, has there been a player that we haven't mentioned that you just wanted to give a quick shout out to, just their development, how they've been playing this season? Because I don't want to leave anybody out, because we have had a lot of really good performances already.
Well, you gave her a little mention there, but yeah, Conrad. I think there were signs of it coming in at the World Cup with Sweden, but I still think at that time, I think I tweeted and I've said it before, that she seemed like the player that you'd want before the assist. You know, she was great at running and her dribbling and her pace, but the final pass was lacking, the final shot was lacking. So if you could get her involved into the build-up to then pass to whoever's going to assist, she'd do well. But this season, she's just made me look like a bit of a mug. You know, she's like, hey, I can assist. You know, I can put some dangerous crosses into the box that perhaps she should even have more assists than she currently does, because, you know, maybe a bit of good defending or the shots not being great. I think she's definitely up there with one of my players of the season. Maybe that's because I'm comparing it to last season and obviously the stark contrast in how she's playing, but I don't think it's completely like wrong to say that she's definitely up there. And I think she became a bit of a meme last season, with especially with her dancing, which we all love. But I think we're all now loving her for the player that she's become, and it's great.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great shout. It's just like, you know, the old adage that goals change games, but I think that goals also change players' confidence. Mm-hmm. And ever since she basically just darted through Villa's back line and scored that goal, she's been like, she's like, oh, that's what I'm meant to do. Like, oh, this is what I can do here. And it's just like, yeah, that's it. That's it. That's what we want you to do. Like, very direct, very good, whether it's going direct to goal and scoring yourself or getting by on a wing and putting it across. That's exactly what we want you to do. So, yeah, she's been great. Again, thank you so much for joining us here at the Fran Kirby's Fight Club. Welcome to the club, Harry Edwards. Thank you again.
Thank you for having me. I'm assuming this isn't like the other Fight Club. I can't talk about this Fight Club.
Well, we will publish it, so that rule doesn't exist here. The funny thing is, we joked about a tagline for this, and we were like, there's no way we can really make that work because we need people to talk about this. But yeah, you can, and thank you again. If you want, please plug all of your work, your socials, whatever you want people to follow and promote, plug it away.
Yeah, I guess it's just at HarryEdwards16 on Twitter. I think everything that I do goes through there. You might find me annoying on match days when I realize that, oh, there's so many stats to tweet. Here's one stat, here's another. For a person who obviously works for a website that deals with stats, and I see how like the social media guides do it, you know, it's all nice and paced out. I'm just throw all the stats at Twitter. What sticks, you know. I have so many on my spreadsheet, so many ahead that I just want to get out. So I might be annoying at times, but I like to think I have the odd gem in there.
Never annoying. In fact, one of my favorite things is when Harry drops a tweet and then suddenly the Chelsea official account drops a stat, and I'm like, oh, so that may have been a little something that you weren't aware of, because it really is impressive how you do it, and I think it really adds a lot to the game. Especially, you know, there's, again, a longer podcast probably to be had about the history of the women's game, you know, from, and specific club histories. I think the success recently has brought a lot of people in, and this isn't really any shade to anybody, because I think however you come to watch the sport, root for a team, like, it's all good. Like, I don't have any issues with any of that. But I do think like the historical context is always interesting, because a lot of these players, like Fran, like other players as well, Mary Mielda, another one, have been here for a while. And there's a lot of history even before their times at Chelsea. And it's kind of fun to have those contextual things, especially when you see a list of players and you're like, oh, yeah, I remember them. Or if you don't remember them, then you look them up and you kind of watch. Maybe you're able to watch like some highlights or something. Like, I just kind of love that. So, yeah, for me, never gets annoying. Appreciate the stats. Love them always.
I was going to say, there are some players that you might recognize. And I think I've had some like Jackie Grunen and Rachel Williams, names that you know, but I get people saying, well, did they play for Chelsea? And I think that's another good thing, like you said, about the history. It's just,
there's
so much
to learn.
That's
another huge one. I absolutely love when that happens. It's like, oh, that player did? It's like, yeah, we had it. Like, especially when you watch some of those old school, like, I think, oh man, the name is escaping me now, but there's like some random teams that had like some absolutely incredible squads. Like, there's a random, I need to get the name of the team, because I don't think they don't exist in the top flight anymore in Sweden. But there was a team in Sweden that had like Marta, Kristen Press. Like, if you look at the squad, it's just like, oh my God, like, this team would win the Champions League like today. It was outrageous. So yeah, there's just a lot that has been even thinking about. We've talked a lot of German players, you know, Potsdam, another team that was really good, but unfortunately had some issues, especially once investment from, you know, bigger clubs came in, and they've struggled to, but they used to be incredible. You know, they were super difficult to beat. So anyway, we're now just talking and rambling and reminiscing about the history of football. We'll save all that maybe for another podcast. But again, Harry, thank you so much. And thank y'all for listening to Fran Kirby's Fight Club. We'll be back once Chelsea is back. Arsenal, big game coming up.